Hey, Rebels. My name is Matthew Barton. Welcome to the Rebellion Brewing Podcast. Have you ever tried a vegan donut? I have, and I'll admit I was deeply skeptical it could taste as good as a regular donut. And that's not to say I'm a donut snob, but Regina has folks like Hobo Donuts, Cookie Lady, and Everyday Kitchen putting out some really interesting artisanal stuff. And then my wife told me I had to try a vegan donut by Tangerine. It was possibly the best donut I've tasted in my life. No fooling. And then I tried the coffee from Tangerine while picking up my next vegan donut. And that coffee was lights out, one of the best cups I've ever had. And then I tried a lunch offering when I went back to get a cup of coffee and a donut. And they were also amazing. Amy Schulhauser is the culinary mastermind behind all of it. Her team is doing some really great work with food in the city, and I'm super excited to sit down with her and talk all about what it is she does. So let's get into it. Amy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
How's it going?
It's good. It is good. Well, as good as can be expected during COVID, but good.
When I want to try and explain Tangerine and Slice, I have a hard time. What is it in a nutshell that you're doing?
You know, other people have tried to put labels on us too. Are you a restaurant? Are you a coffee shop? Are you a cafe? I intentionally called Tangerine a food bar so that we wouldn't have any of those restrictions around it. If it's food, we can serve it. There are limitations. It's like there aren't any. And so what I really like to tell people is it is a community, a place where people feel at home or a second home. And if we happen to serve food and drinks, awesome. I just want them to feel like they belong there.
Is it kind of like a community gathering, love of food kind of vibe?
Yeah, I think so. And I think the people that appreciate what we do will always come for us and support us. So some have called it a culinary playground where we cook. And if you happen to buy it, awesome. We like that a lot. We don't stick to, we change our menu once a week. Every Monday there's a brand new menu, but up until COVID, we changed our menu every single day. And someone said, okay, well, that's not sustainable. You're never going to keep that up. Well, we did for 9.5 years. So it did prove to be a good strategy. Things changed, of course, with just like everything. And now our weekly menu, it has its benefits as well. So I think people appreciate the variety for sure. And then the fact that they know it's going to be fresh, super fresh, and what's in season.
One of the things I think about is trying to explain to people what to expect when they walk into Tangerine or Slice. What is the way you want them to perceive it when they walk in?
I hear a lot of time people say, oh, it's so cute in here. Now, I personally don't care for that word, but I like the sentiment behind it, and that they feel like warm and welcomed, and there's good energy there. And I'm a big fan of energy. So either it brings you up or it levels you out or whatever. I hope that comes across. So that would be my Tangerine kid. I call them my kids. And then the latest one, Slice, is a reflection of the park that it's in and the vibrancy. We wanted the food to be vibrant and fresh and just really a continuation of what you see through the windows when you look out at the park. And I'm hoping that comes through. It's very lively and energetic, and the people that work there are also lively and energetic. I really enjoy that part of my job in creating those kinds of spaces.
Full disclosure, my wife works at Kinexus, and one of her roles was helping people get used to the new building and get used to the idea of there's this space called Slice within the Kinexus building that the public can go to. It's not just for the employees that work there, and they can get a really nice meal, a cup of coffee, and sit in this wide open room that's full of glass and really bright and look out onto the park. Mm-hmm. And I walked in there with her. I sat down. We had the coffee. We had lunch. And it was wonderful. Like, just bright and uplifting, not
good,
not a scary kind of hipster space. You don't need a special handshake or password to go in there.
Well, I'm glad that came across good, because I'm not good at handshakes. So I think that that was part of the strategy, I guess, of the building itself. And then when we were chosen as the provider of that cafe, I really appreciated that they had that we had done our jobs well enough that they recognized that with our previous spaces. So it was quite humbling and very quite an honor to be chosen. And I wanted to really make sure that we didn't let them down in that regard, and that we could continue their vision through what we do as well.
How much input did you get into building out that space or filling up that space?
We got, they did the planning. We got some input in, does this work for you? And ultimately they were the ones who gave the okay to the contractors. But as for that after, like the branding, the colors in there, we did have to get permission on all of that. But the colors we chose, one is called Verdant Green. So it's like the hills. So that's the green color. And then a coral, which is our kind of our tangerine flavor that comes through. And then we use raw wood. And I love that part about it too. So they loved the concept. And then we were able to install our own like imprint on it. And my gosh, I just, whenever I walk by outside, I want to take a picture. I just think it's so, so cool.
It is a gorgeous space. Selfishly, I wanted to bug you about the vegan donuts.
Yes.
How did that come to be? Because that's a lifesaver for me. I can't have lactose. It's really hard to find a donut that I can even eat without getting a tummy ache. You know, I kind of just ready myself. I'm going to have a problem later. And then I come in and I eat yours and I'm like, I don't feel like I compromised. I don't feel like this was an afterthought. It was like, well, I guess we'll just throw it in there for the weirdos.
So. Yeah, well, maybe a few years ago that would have been the case, you know, throw it in there, just be like this kind of niche market. But the plant-based scene here is really exploding. And even if you do eat meat or any of the other stuff, you can't tell, you know. It's not like years ago when you say you're a vegetarian, someone would say to you, oh, I don't like tofu. That was the immediate response to that. And now it's not even part of the conversation. So veganism is just, it happens to be what it is. And they're so good that you just don't even realize that it doesn't have dairy, it doesn't have eggs. It's they're cooked in canola oil. And we use flax for the eggs. So really, I think you're getting some health benefits on that one, Matthew. So, you know, eat away. But they started when we wanted to have a bit of an something different from the other offerings, and keep them simple and have it so that they're inclusive for everyone. And really it just took off. Like we used to do a few and then it became a few more, and then people are reserving them now. So, and we were taking some over to Slice. So you have options that way. And it became its own thing. And now we get emails, what are your flavors tomorrow? Or can I reserve six? I don't care what they are, or, you know, things like that. And that's really impressive. I love that about our city and what we do and to contribute to it.
I guess we haven't been smart enough to call ahead and reserve. We've showed up a few times and they've been sold out for the day. We're like, okay, I guess I'll just get the coffee. I'll come back next time for the donuts.
Some people come right when we open, so there's an option too.
They line up at the door, maybe?
Not quite, but we do get quite a few right at 7 o'clock. We have to have the boxes ready to go.
When I think back to what you were saying about how veganism is no longer just this niche thing, nobody questions tofu anymore, it's just kind of par for the course. Then my next question is kind of, what foodie trend or ingredient are you thinking about now? What has you excited about working with food?
I've seen a lot of articles that talk about trends, and we don't go by trends necessarily. We go with what is interesting to us now and what we can, what we've never explored. So by that, we look at it and then we go, oh, okay, that's cool. And then we don't do much with it. But last year, 2020 was supposed to be the triumphant return of bread and carbs and pasta and kind of an anti-gluten-free movement sort of thing. And it did just that, but mostly because people were making their own sourdough and banana bread and all sorts of stuff like that. So I look at those and I take them with a grain of salt. And this year was an interesting list. It was quite diverse and some were contradictory even. So there's going to be a push for hyper-local foods. Great, we'll take that. And because of the cultural shifts with, say, Black Lives Matter and being very aware of appropriations in cultures, there's going to be a grassroots development of these cuisines. Now, I am the whitest person you'll ever meet, and I don't have any strong cultural attachments to my Eastern European heritage, but that could come in. I'm really excited to see some traditional foods that are coming out that way and from our people in our own city and province. But one of the things that I found super interesting is our now attention given to how much food we waste and the way we can use things that we would traditionally throw away. And it comes at a time, I think it was just a few days ago, IKEA came out with a cookbook and it's called Scraps Book. And they use all scraps of things. And one of the things that I had to print it out even was banana peel bacon. Now, I thought you couldn't even eat banana peels, to be honest. You compost them, you throw them away, whatever. But you take those and you scrape off the white on the inside and then you can put some flavoring and glazes on them and put them in the oven and make a banana peel bacon out of that. So I was like, oh my gosh, so carrot top, pesto and potato peel this and that and all sorts of things. And judging by how much food I know, in my own household that we throw away, I think that could be the next thing. And the next, am I excited to use it? Yes, I would say so. I've never really thought of it like that. We compost a lot. We feed chickens and pigs on my uncle's farm. So I don't feel as guilty throwing stuff in the bin as I would in the garbage. So yeah, I'm interested to see what comes of that and how people react to it when it's traditionally regarded as waste. And if you're going to introduce something brand new, now is the time, I think, because there's so much change that you can put it in there in the mix and it might be more accepted.
I kind of want to back up a bit. So does the banana peel taste like bacon? Are you putting a salt and a glaze on it?
Yeah, so it's a savory glaze and marinade. And then it's apparent, I haven't made it yet because it's coming though. It has a slight sweetness to it and a slight banana flavor to it. I don't know how I feel about that just yet. I think that the possibilities could be really cool. What do you think?
Well, I think people would be willing to try it once if it came from Amy Schulhauser.
And then they're like, oh, Amy, what have you done to us?
I have an easy out. I'm allergic to bananas. So okay. If I ate it, my tongue would swell up and I might turn blue. But I could just use my kids as guinea pigs. I'm sure they'd be happy to try it.
To me, it sounds like it would be more like a savory fruit leather kind of jerky type thing. I will make it for sure. I just don't know if it's going to take off like regular bacon.
I don't know if anything could beat regular bacon. We did bacon wrapped scallops last night. And I was teasing my little guy because he's like, I don't want a scallop. I don't know what that is. He's five and he's being a turkey. And I was like, man, I'm going to steal those right off your plate. And he kind of looked at me, and that was my reverse psychology. And he snatched one up and ate it. And he decided he liked it. And I pretended I was disappointed I couldn't steal all his bacon wrapped scallops.
It's all a mental game with kids, though, isn't it?
Trying to fake him out.
Yeah.
But I was a little bit sad I didn't get the extra piece of scallop and bacon.
Yeah, I would be too.
I know my wife has done, your cooking classes, and you've been doing them remotely through COVID. Has it been a success or kind of banging your head on the wall? How are those remote cooking classes going?
They're going really well. We did our first one on April 30th of last year after we had like a holy moly, we have zero sales. We have zero sales in an entire month. And that, you know, I'm sure a lot of people had that yucky feeling in their stomach. And so kind of got our wits about us and then said, I wonder if this could work. I mean, people take like somewhat of a class, I guess, on YouTube. So why not us? And can we charge for it? And, you know, we lowered the price, of course, and we tried one. You send out the shopping list and the recipes and anything and kinds of equipment you might need. People get that stuff on their own and they log into Zoom, and it's about an hour to an hour and a half. And we basically cook supper together. And holy, the response has been insane. Like this past week alone, I did 7 of them. I do 5 this week. I do 6 next week. So we have private classes. We've done family reunion classes over 3 provinces. They're accessible to everyone. We have a lot of people from rural areas who can't necessarily or don't want to drive in for a class. People whose childcare is not stable. They want to join something that is maybe a series. And it's been very enlightening for me in the accessibility part of it and making it open for everyone who has an internet connection. And that's been really satisfying and humbling, I have to say, because I didn't think it could, you know, what's the draw of that? And, you know, is our product so good that we can't replicate it online, and you know, just things like that. And yeah, for sure, you know, things change and circumstances change, and people quite enjoy it. You know, it's just an interactive and fun experience. We've had kids classes. We do all sorts of neat stuff. I have to say the seniors, we've had some older people do not know how to mute a mic to save their lives, but hey, that's the worst of it. It's all right.
I am not a chef and I am not a cat. Could be.
Yeah, exactly.
The battle cry of the Schulhauser seniors classes.
Yeah.
When you are engaged in this online learning piece, what are you learning or what are you taking away? You alluded to it a little bit.
Yeah, one of them is because I joke around a lot. I don't take myself too seriously, and so when I'm joking around, I don't get the feedback of people like also maybe laughing, and I feel like I'm put on the spot or people are, oh my God, are they judging me? That fell flat. That was a terrible joke. Just the self-doubt, and I had to get over that. Like, first of all, who cares if my jokes fall flat? I did, but then I got over that. And having to compress all of this knowledge and all of this education and showing people things into a laptop camera, and then I put my cell phone over top of my cutting board, so I have to make sure that translates over the link there, and I can get a good lesson out of it. That's been tough, and it's also not something I'm used to. I'm used to being hands-on or like, here's how you do it, and can I show you this? And I like the interaction with people in real life. So that part was again humbling, and I learned a lot. Like a year, I know when my mic doesn't work and how to fix it, and I know all sorts of these things too. So I found it as a really great learning opportunity for me as well, and strengthening my skills, because I can't be like looking off of a paper or a book if I've kind of, you know, skipped a step or something. You get to be quicker, that's for sure, and make sure that your presentation style works, and is my volume at a good level, and did I use too much inflection? All of it is, like everyone else this year, this is my new skill set.
I think for you, based on what you've just told me, coming out of the pandemic, you're going to be able to go on like the TED Talk circuit and just crush a seminar on what it is you do and how you are an expert.
Oh, well, I wouldn't mind that at all. I love this kind of stuff. I just found I really have, I wouldn't say a knack for it. I just really enjoy the format and it's a performance really is what it comes down to. And trying to hone that and make that an actual like legit skill I can put on my resume is a win.
The fact that you tell me you've been doing 5 to 7 live classes a week, we've been doing live broadcasts for beer tastings where you can just tune in, pick up the beer from the tap room or your closest retailer. And we kind of do this producer performer collab where Mark will be speaking to the audience and I'll kind of be on my own laptop watching the questions come through and feeding him that information while he's working the crowd, basically.
Yeah.
And it works that way. And we can fill an hour, but we've only been doing about one a month, and it's a lot of work. So it really humbles me to hear you're doing it like 5 to 7 times a week. That's sweaty.
Yeah, it was. I had 2 on Saturday alone, 1 in the afternoon, 1 in the evening. And I had to shower after. Like, that was intense. And I'm just standing in one spot. But it's expressions. And the one class wanted to party more. There was a private class. And the other one was more of a team building for a company. And so you have to adjust the levels of your enthusiasm and your joke levels. And can I say a swear word here and there? you have to know your crowd through a screen. So it's I sweaty. That's the word.
On the Rebellion podcast, you can absolutely fucking swear.
Oh, fuck yes. My husband's just walked up when I said that. He's like, what is going on?
Welcome to the Rebellion.
Mm-hmm. Glad to be here.
I know when we're talking about food and we're meal planning at home, it feels like home cooking as a skill has become really huge, especially during the pandemic. We can't treat ourselves as often as we might want to with a restaurant. And through your teaching, Allison has added a few extra new dishes to our menu, to the rotation, as it were.
Awesome.
And one of the things I wanted to ask you was, what's something that you've perfected over the pandemic that you think people just need to absolutely try?
Ooh. Well, this is a classic answer. It was perfected before the pandemic, if I may be so humble to say that, is pad thai. Our pad thai recipe, we've honed it over the last, I'm going to say 10 years, because even though the school is only 7 years old, I've been teaching classes for that long. And it was one of our original 6, so to speak, of the classes that we only offered. And from there, tweaked and perfected. And I even have things laid out in paragraph form. And it's a foolproof pad thai. And it's awesome every time. So we teach, actually that's a class that's coming up virtually too, that we teach, but any of our Thai classes included. And it's just one for the ages, I think. There are a few ingredients, but you know, it's worth the extra work and prep.
She had me heading out to the Chinese grocery store to pick up the special ingredients for that pad thai because she had made it based on online recipes, and it was
okay.
Sorry, her noodles just sucked. They were like gritty and awful. And then she did your class and she's like, that's where I went wrong with the noodles. And that's where I went wrong with the onions and the spices. There was a lot of presumed knowledge within the original online recipes that just didn't translate. And as soon as you kind of just spelled it out, she was like, oh, well, obviously that makes sense now. And it tastes great and it's delicious.
Awesome. I'm so glad to hear that. And I did not know that would be, I forgot which class she took or classes she took. So that actually works out. You tasted it too. I think that's the essence of a lot of what we do, is like, there's just one little tweak that can change the whole course of cooking. And for some people, it's how they grip their knives even. And I know you show that in the in-person ones, but, every now and then I'll talk about it in my online ones. We have to move at a fairly quick pace though, so I don't get too into it. And really, that's that's most people know how to cook inherently. I think it's kind of built in somewhat, and they just need permission, so to speak. And then these little changes to small things, and they're off and on their way.
One of the things I've noticed is it feels like people a few years younger than me, and I don't know if it's generational, but they're scared to touch raw meat.
Yeah, you noticed that too, did you? Yeah, it's
very, very irrationally afraid of handling raw meat.
I know. I'm not sure where that came from. When I saw, I don't know if it's still around, but there used to be chicken that was individually wrapped, so you didn't have to touch it at all. Do you remember that in the grocery stores? And I thought, who is that afraid of touching chicken? Like, come on, just wash your hands. But I see it a lot, and I see people afraid of the knives, and I see them, you know, overcooking something because of some, I don't know if their like health program in school was like, raw meat is going to poison you or something. But we're trying to undo that in what we do. Luckily, they're open to hearing these kinds of things, and we're able to change their mind on some stuff. But if they didn't work in a group of four and one person, you know, stepped up and said, okay, I'll cook or I'll, you know, cut the chicken or whatever, then I don't know if they'd ever eat it.
I remember seeing those weird ready rip packs.
Yes.
Where you could just open from the top and then flip and dump the chicken into. I'm like, but what if you got to spatchcock it?
Yeah.
What if you have to add spices or do a rub? You're never going to touch your food, or
I know.
Well, maybe I guess they wear gloves. But
I my rule is, if you're going to eat the food, you need to be able to touch it. Like, it just, it kind of is. It doesn't that go hand in hand? And for a lot of people, it doesn't. And I say, how do you feed yourselves, you know, this far into your life? And they say, well, you know, I open a lot of boxes or, you know, frozen food or whatever. And I think that's such a missed opportunity for them to enjoy something that's better. And that's part of our mission on this planet, is to make sure that there's just a little more out there for them to learn about and to see what we can do with our food supply.
I think what you just said is really inspiring, because you're not shaming people for forgetting where we came from.
I think
It's been since the 80s, kind of this movement away towards easy, prepackaged, heat and eat. We're just trying to get through the day to work to then enjoy the weekend. And
yes.
We don't want to think about cooking, because it's just an extra hard thing that we have to think about.
Yeah, I found that too. And I think that there are a couple of things that are changing that. One is the Food Network, because it's elevated the chef to celebrity status, good or bad. I have to say that it can be a double-edged sword. People think that it's easy and it's glamorous, and it's really not. It is not. And the people on TV have slugged it out over thousands of hours in the kitchen, right? However, it does give more light to what we do, and we appreciate that a lot. And the work that does go into it, we highlight that. So that has helped. What also has helped, and as a silver lining to the pandemic, is the actual, like, the lockdowns and the, oh my gosh, what are we going to cook? That has given more appreciation to what we do and to what we put into our bodies too. I don't know where that came from. I guess it's like, well, Larry, I do know. I've read a lot about this, marketing shifts and TV dinners from the 50s and changes in demographics, and that's a whole other show. But where it came from is not being cool to cook for yourself. Like, it's kind of a badge of honor that you eat out for all your meals at some point. And it is turning around. And I definitely, over this last year, we've noticed it too. And people buying, like, when there was no yeast to be had, we sold it at our shop. We did a little grocery store with our tables when there was the first lockdown. So we sold a ton of that stuff, and they just kind of fell in love with cooking again, or for the first time.
One of the things you said I wanted to circle back to was kind of how people approach cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And I know some people want to attach, like, this whole it's my life family story, and they get really schmutzy. But for me, I've always found it easier to conceive of as like a chemistry experiment.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
When my wife got me a new espresso machine for Christmas, and I wanted to understand, like, the grind and the freshness of the beans and how to treat the water. And it kind of, I think it all flowed from my experience with Rebellion, understanding that if you are precise, you can replicate a really good thing consistently.
Yes.
It took me about 10 to 15 cups to dial it in.
Okay.
Like I was having problems just pulling a shot. I couldn't get the pump wouldn't push the water through. And I was like, okay, I'll coarsen my grind a bit. And then how to have the bed of the coffee beans for the grind be just perfect to get the oils to taste correct, because it was tasting sour.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had temperature control issues. So I'm like, how do I mitigate the temperature control so I don't get a sour consistency from the temperature being improper? And then I tasted your guys' coffee and I'm like, okay, when I get the chance, I'm going to walk in there. I'm going to be like, okay, show me how. Like, teach me your way, because I want to do it exactly your way.
Well, our machine is $20,000, so there might be a little bit of a difference there. It takes away some of the artisanship out of that. So I think you have achieved master level on espresso from the sounds of it. Yeah, it's a lot of things are very precise in that way, and some are not. And I have I actually have a science degree. I have a geology degree and not exactly chemistry or physics, which I include in a lot of my classes, but it gives me a curiosity and an understanding of how these things work and the way that flavors work. And I find it all so scientific, and sometimes I'll get excited about a scientific principle about heat. Heat's a really important thing, of course, in cooking, and how heat and acid work together, and heat and base work together. And I can just see people's eyes like kind of glaze over. I'm like, isn't this really cool? They don't agree a lot of the time, but it does come down to precision and to principles that we might know but not actually be able to spell out. So I really appreciate you taking the time to learn that, because sometimes most people just wing it and hope it works.
My wife, she's looking at me, she's watching me watch YouTube videos, and she's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, if I angle the mug at this angle, then it will create a chirping sound. And if the chirping sound is occurring, that means the milk is frothing properly and circulating to then create this chain of heat for the sugars to create this nice froth, and then it adds to the texture. And she's just like, you've taken this too far. You're insane. You're obsessed. I'm like, but it's really good. And we're trapped in our house in a quarantine with two children.
Yes.
And if I don't get a really nice cup of coffee, I might have a double homicide.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Well, from the sounds of it, we need to be friends, because I really appreciate that whole process, you know, and getting something right, especially for this time, you know, when we have a lot of time to obsess over things. Might as well put it for good instead of evil.
I have friends who've promised, they're like, as soon as I get my shot, my vaccine, they're like, I'm going to come over and we're going to have coffee. Because they've seen my pictures and my posts and my obsessing over the freshness of the beans. Like,
yes.
I've got a pot that you can push the air out of, and I store it in the fridge for prolonged freshness of these beans.
Ooh. Okay, that's next level.
But it tastes so good.
Yeah. It's worth it, I think. Yes.
That's kind of one of my fave pandemic food stories. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure you've got to have a few in your back pocket. What is your favorite pandemic food story so far?
Oh, pandemic food story. Oh my gosh. Well, you know what I've noticed? I don't have any, like, I'm all about data myself. And this is just anecdotal, but I noticed that when we were open for takeout, and no one put cream or sugar in their coffee. It was all black coffee we sold. It was crazy. We kept the cream in the fridge even. We didn't even have it in the little jugs, because that's how infrequently people would put cream or milk in their coffee. And they just wanted bare bones. The level of gluten-free requests we had just went to zero. No one was eating gluten-free. Now, that could be, I'm not sure. I think those who are celiac will always, of course, be gluten-free, and those who are doing it as a maybe a dietary or like a following a say keto or something, they're like, you know what, now is not the time for that kind of discipline. I need something that makes me feel good. And feel good they did, because we made so much mac and cheese, so much meatloaf, so much like things with sauce. People love that. It just made them feel good. And we were taking whatever we could to have that feel good part, because there was so much that we got taken away from us. And comfort food was the rage. And I think that will continue for a little bit until we realize that none of our clothes fit, which is like, hello, that's me. We're humans. We need our fixes. We need our psychological and like this. It feels safe, I think, and normal to have these kinds of foods. And that's, I don't know if that's, it's not the most exciting story, but it is definitely something I noticed. And then as the restrictions lifted, we put cream in coffee. Oh yeah, can I get cream? Can I get sugar? Can I get two sugar? Can I get honey in my coffee? And it's almost like they let themselves have those teeny little luxuries again.
Interesting.
Yeah, we're humans are strange and interesting and cool and all of the things.
One of the reasons I like to speculate with chefs about food and flavor trends is because as a brewery, we're trying to move where the puck will be, mm-hmm. and where consumers are moving. And that's part of the reason I dropped off some of the Majestic Milkshake IPA mm-hmm. to you.
Yes.
Because we think this is where the puck will be going.
Okay.
There's not a lot of milkshake IPAs available in the Saskatchewan market at the moment.
Right.
But to have this passion fruit beer is a little bit different, something new, yes. Not completely foreign, and we're trying to do something that's accessible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to get your thoughts if you've... Have you tasted it yet?
Yes, I've had 3 out of 4 of them.
3 out of the 4?
Yeah. No judgment. Just purely for research and development, you have to know, right? Yeah. First of all,
sure.
Passion fruit is one of my favorite flavors of all time. I love that. So it was a good fit for me, and I love IPA. So I don't know if you knew that before, but I was like, oh my gosh, this works for me. Then what I got immediately was the fruit. It was very fruity and very lovely. I got some apricot out of there. I got some pear, just right off the bat. And I thought immediately of pork, because it would, the fruit and the pork goes together so well. And back in the day when I did my internship and for cooking in Calgary, we did this little pork medallion. So you cook the pork tenderloin with some coarsely crushed peppercorns on the outside, and you have so it's about medium, and you cut it into slices after it's cooked. And then we made this, we called a jeweled fruit chutney, and it was big chunks of apricots and cherries and all of the dried fruits we cut up, and we made this chutney with a lot of good acidity to it. And then we put a dollop of that on each one, and that was the appetizer. We sold hundreds of those, and as the new kid in the kitchen, I made a lot of that, and it just reminded me of that first bite when you get the fruit first on this bite, and then it finishes with the pork and the meatiness. All of that together, I think, would just be like a super good pairing, and just sit down and eat a plate of those.
I like that you connected those two pieces, because we've been saying for years that IPAs and South Asian food go hand in hand. You want that big, bold, flavorful food to mm-hmm. pair with really big, bold IPAs.
Mm-hmm.
And that you connected the fruit piece to it, I'm just like, yeah,
we're right
on the same page.
Like I said, we have to hang out now.
Absolutely.
I love the IPAs that are that will bite you, like the hops. I love the super hot hoppy ones, and this one I didn't find it bit me. I love the fruit on this one, and I'm not saying that that's a con on this whatsoever. I just love the smoothness of it, and I think the fruit is, it's so fruit forward that it needs fruit to be eaten with it.
The goal for that one is to balance it out.
Mm-hmm.
We've been working to try to explain to people that IPA as a category is a huge umbrella mm-hmm. term. And there are many different ways to have an IPA. There's your classic West Coast, piney, bracing, bitter, aggressive, you know, maybe face melting. But then you've got your really soft, pillowy, juicy, fruity, yes, hazy. And when we use whole leaf hops, we're not just using the hamster pellet hops that have been compressed. We're using the whole leaf, which we argue gives you a fuller, more balanced flavor, more aroma, and a bigger, complex expression of what's going on in the hop rather than just that one note punch.
I like that term, complex expression. That is exactly it. Yes, there's a lot going on. And when I did my internship, I asked about their food philosophies, the chefs there, and they said the food should have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And I think that beer also has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and or a finish, I guess. So it pairs beautifully. There's a lot of synchronicity, if you will, with the food.
Well, now I just want to like throw every single one of our beers at you and just sit down and be like, okay, first sip to last sip, what do you think?
Yes. I'm in.
If people are interested in checking out your online classes or hopping over to Tangerine or Slice, where can they find more information?
Our school's website is schoolhouseculinaryarts.ca, and house is spelled H-A-U-S. So that's one of the things I always point out, school spelled S-C-H-O-O-L. And then Tangerine, the food bar is that's our email. It's tangerineregina.ca. And then you'll find our Slice link right on that page too.
In the spirit of your background with geology, I got to say, your donuts are very nice and you shouldn't take them for granted.
Oh my God. Classic. I love it.
Little dad jokes on a Monday for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amy, thank you for your time today.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Rebels, thanks for listening today. If you have any questions or comments about this episode, be sure to join us on our brand new Facebook group page, The Rebellion Brewing Podcast. I'm going to include links in the show notes so you can find all about Schoolhouse online. I'm also proud to let you know that we're members of the Saskatchewan Podcast Network. It's a one-stop shop for tons of locally produced shows from across our province. You can find them at saskpodcastnetwork.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Untappd so you don't miss out on the latest in Sask craft beer news. Thank you for joining the Rebellion.